Well, hello. We're starting a new series today on 1 Chronicles, would you believe? It's a, in a sense, an obscure book in the Old Testament. The first 9 chapters are just lists of names, genealogies. But I'm not ashamed to kind of begin with this and preach on this, because if you're a Christian, then the whole Bible is yours from God. And yes, some parts are more central, more key, perhaps more significant in terms of what they teach, but the whole Bible is God's word, and therefore we're bound to it. So as you hopefully read your Bible every day, you will make sure that you come across and read through 1 Chronicles chapters 1 to 9, as well as other parts. So when preaching, it would be wrong for us to kind of skip the perhaps more difficult or more obscure parts and just focus on the easier parts. So in a sense, I think if you see this as a as hopefully a guide or a help to reading one of the more obscure passages, see it in that light, maybe. So chapter 1 of 1 Chronicles, we're on this series of 1 Chronicles, we're going to look at the first 9 chapters just in 2 sermons, first one today and then next week, picking up things from the whole of the rest of the nine chapters, first 9 chapters. So chapter 1. Now, it no introduction, it just starts Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah. Now, some of those names we know brilliantly: Adam, Noah, Methuselah. But they're just listed as names, no introduction. Why are we told these names? Well, hopefully we'll see. Now, is this a dull beginning or an exciting beginning? Well, I think it depends on your own perspective. Nowadays, a lot of people are researching their family trees. And I reckon if you could trace your family tree from yourself backwards and backwards and keep going, you might get to the 18th century, 17th century, 16th century. But if you kept going back and back and back and back, if you could get to Noah and Lamech and Adam, wouldn't you be excited? If you could trace every single way, all the way down that line, wouldn't you want to start your genealogy, your family tree, with the word Adam? So in that sense, this is an explosive start. It's an amazing start. The writer, the chronicler, as maybe we'll call him, he says, Adam belongs to us. We have a connection with Adam, the first human being that God made. This is an all-encompassing family tree, if you like. It's saying from the very beginning, the very first person God made on the earth, we are connected. We belong. Now, you notice in that list I read from verses 1 to 3, there's 10 names. And then it's kind of like a what I call just bounces 1 to 10 all through those names. And then once we've said Noah, then we slow down and almost to a stop. Verse 4, the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And now we're going to look into each of those three sons and their families. Now, he starts backwards, Shem, Ham, Japheth, then he starts going into Japheth's family, then he'll go into Ham's family, then Shem. So Japheth is named last, but his family is listed in verses 5 to 7. And then we get Ham's family, which is verses 8 to 16. I've kind of printed mine out and coloured it so it's easy for me to see. And then we get the real one he wants to talk about. He's got out of the way the ones that are less significant, if you like. And he then homes in finally on the one that is the more significant, which is Shem. And Shem begins in verse 17. So let me just read from verse 17 a few bits. Well, no, I'll read from Ham. Because Ham, you'll recognize some of the names under Ham. The sons of Ham, this is verse 8, the sons of Ham, Cush, which is what we might call now part of Ethiopia, Egypt, Put and Canaan. Now, Egypt we know, Canaan we know. So what the chronicler is pointing out to us is from Adam came not just Israel or Judah, but other nations, the other nations. And having gone from Adam to Noah before he paused here with Noah's family, he's saying the whole of the nations of the world belong together. They have all the root in the same place. And he's happy to name Cush and Egypt and Canaan. And then going from each of those, Cush, Egypt and Canaan, verse 9, verse 11, verse 13, he follows through from each of those. He names the people that became tribes or groupings. And if you notice in verse 13, from verse 13, we get a familiar list of names here. Canaan was the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and of them. Here's the list that's familiar to us. Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hivites, Arkites, Sinites, Arvadites, Zemarites, and Hamathites. Now, the last ones aren't so familiar, but the first ones are. They were the people in the land before Joshua took the people in, the people that were against them there. So all the nations here are included. Before we get to Shem, the one that the chronicler really wants to talk about. So verse 17, Shem. Now Shem, the sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. And then as he did with Noah's sons, he goes through each one in turn, but starting with the ones that are least important, which was Aram. The sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, and Meshech. And that's the end of Aram. If you're going backwards along that list in verse 17, Aram, he skips out Lud. Lud's not mentioned, but then Arphaxad. Arphaxad, verse 18, Arphaxad, the father of Shelah. Shelah, the father of Eber. Two sons were born to Eber. One was named Peleg, because in his time the earth was divided. His brother was named Joktan. And then you get a little bit about Joktan and his family, verses 20 to 23. But we're going to really concentrate on Peleg. So Eber, verse 19, Eber had two sons. One was Peleg, one was Joktan. We've put Joktan out of the way. Now we're going to focus on Peleg. So you see what's happening here? The very beginning, verses 1 to 3, we bounced down 10 names very quickly. Then we stopped at Noah and his three sons, Shem, Ham and Japheth. And now we're in the Shem line, and we've seen from Shem some sons, and we've knocked out one or two by just ignoring them, or one Aram we touched on a little bit. Then we home in on Arphaxad. But with Arphaxad, we home in on verse 18, Arphaxad the father of Shelah, then Shelah the father of Eber. Eber two sons, Peleg and Joktan, but it's Peleg we're going to focus on. So verse 24 now goes through these ones we're going to focus on. Shem, son of Noah, Arphaxad, Shelah, Eber, Peleg. And then we get some names that aren't anywhere else in this chapter. Ru, Serug, Nahor, Terah. And now hopefully you're getting these names have become familiar. Nahor, Terah, and Abraham, that is Abraham. See, now the chronicler has traced for another 10 names. So we're bouncing down 10 more names. Shem, Arphaxad, Shelah, Eber, Peleg, Ru, Serug, Nahor, Terah, and Abraham. So having broadened to the whole world at the very beginning, but then narrowed. He's still broadening out to some connections, but now he's narrowing down this line right from Shem right through to Abraham. And having done that 10 generation bounce, if you like, now he comes in, like he did before with Noah's sons, he homes in on Abraham's sons. Sons of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael. Now, he then gets the least important ones out of the way first again. Verse 29, these are their descendants, so Ishmael's descendants, verses 29 to 31. And then in verse 32, it says, the sons born to Keturah, Abraham's concubine, and he touches on them, including the name Midian, which you'll know from the book of Judges. But again, that divides, there's touches a couple of those from Keturah's line through Abraham. But then, having got those out of the way, Ishmael and Keturah's line, he then comes back to Sarah's line, the son of promise, who was Isaac, verse 34. But see, what he's not doing, I don't think he's saying these people don't matter, the ones that he's noticed and then dismissed. I don't think he's saying they don't matter, because he's named them individually, person to person to person. So he's not saying they don't matter. He's saying they're here and noticing they're part of the whole catch of God's people, the people made in God's image. But then he does want to focus on the promised line, the covenant line. So verse 34, Abraham was the father of Isaac, and then Isaac, the father of Esau and Israel, the two sons. And of course, as usual, he deals with Esau's line first, because he wants in the end, and this doesn't come to chapter 2, to focus on Israel. Now, Israel, in other parts of the Bible, it would be Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel, but in Chronicles, it's always the name Israel that's used for the man Jacob. So Abraham's two sons, Esau and Jacob, Esau and Israel. But the rest of chapter 1 will deal with Esau, and then chapter 2, we pick up the promised line to Israel and so on. But let me just take you through more briefly from here, verse 35 to the end of the chapter. Sons of Esau, they're listed and divided again. Some of them are mentioned. And then verse 38, you get the sons of Seir. Now, who's Seir? Well, Esau or Edom. Edom was like a nickname for Esau, because Edom means red, and that was a nickname given when Esau kind of tricked his brother. The other way around, his brother tricked Esau. So Edom was the name given to Esau as well. So the Edomites were descended from or connected to Esau, but they were connected also to the land of Seir. This is southeast of Palestine, connected to the land of Seir, and Seir was because somebody called Seir was there. So Seir and Edom and Esau are all kind of jumbled up here together, probably because they were all people who were connected to that land, that part of that corner of the world, if you like, was theirs. And this is interesting, because it's not just the chronicler saying these people have a traceable bloodline. He's saying these people seem to have a traceable geographical connection, and therefore connecting through marriage and family and so on. So the names of the sons of Seir, they're listed there in 38, and then from 39 to 42, each of those names gets a little mention of a few more descendants. And then verse 43 to the end says, these were the kings who reigned in Edom before any Israelite king reigned. So Israelite kings are coming, but before they came in Edom, the southeast part, these are the kings that reigned. A couple of familiar names here: Bela, son of Beor. Then you go down to 47 or 46, sorry, when Husham died, Hadad, son of Bedad, who defeated Midian in the country of Moab, succeeded him as king. So Hadad's a familiar name. And then we get another Hadad in verse 50 as well. So those are the kings that reigned in Edom. Then verse 51, you get the chiefs in Edom, or of Edom. So there were kings, but there are also chiefs, and some of them are named. And that kind of ties up all that southeast area, some of whom were direct relatives, some of whom probably not direct like that. But the point of all this really is, God is saying in the words of the chronicler, all of this is mine. I have made all these people, all these connections, and then the ones that haven't been named, I have made all this. Now, the chapter 1 of 1 Chronicles has about 200 names. Now, God could have named every single person that had ever lived, but that would have been too difficult to manage. So we have here, if you like, as much as we can manage of God saying, all these people are mine. The world belongs to me. God's not mentioned, but we can say his activity is everywhere in this chapter. Every name is a human being made in his image, a son of Adam, but also We're also being drawn into this process of selection, as God choosing not this one, but that one down a line, because of the promises he made that are made explicit in Abraham's. In church we have a reading from Genesis 12, beginning of Genesis 12. Why do we want family trees today? Why do people research their family tree, their family history? Well, it may be that it's because in our world where so much has changed, everything is different from what it was a generation or two ago, and everything is different from a generation or two before that. So in two or three lifetimes to us, there's been massive, massive changes. The whole of the culture of life has changed. And so I think we find ourselves asking the question, where do I fit? How do I belong? Who am I? This whole thing of identity. How can I be me? How can I be my authentic self? These are questions which are live in our world. And the chronicler wrote at a time when Israel and Judah had been exiled, they'd been transported off into Babylon, and some of them were trickling back, but the future for them looked empty and bleak. It looked dead, really. They had been important people, but now they were nobodies. So their crisis of identity, if you want to put it in those terms, it's similar to what we're facing today, perhaps. So the chronicler can write to these Israelites, some of whom are getting back into the old place, but it's also different. Some of whom stuck still in Babylon. And he's saying, look, we do belong. We have a connection. God has not forgotten us. Remember Adam? Remember your connection to Adam through all these lines? But he's inclusive. He's saying Ishmael is part of us. Egypt is part of us. Canaan is part of us. Cush is part of us. Even Edom. Edom was often enemies of Israel for many, many, many generations. Even Edom is connected to us. So the chronicler is saying God has not forgotten. He's not forgotten his world. He is caring for us. He is working. He is active on our behalf. But he's also saying, the writer is also saying, I am tracing this line of salvation. Chapter 2 will come on to David in the end. And then that line picks up and the story begins more or less from David. So the writer is not just saying God is God of all the world and everyone's fine. Well, he's not saying that, but he's saying God is God of all the world, and there is a line that I am tracing which will bring salvation for the world. Not just for people of a certain blood. Salvation for the world. Because you see, when he comes, I won't give that away. It's a line that will bring the offer of intimacy with God, salvation with God for the world, for all people, through a line that has been traced individually by God's choosing, in order to, as it says in Genesis 1, so that the whole world may be blessed. God's voice to Abraham. He wants the whole world to be blessed, but through Abraham. So this is a chapter of, if we're willing to see it in this way, a chapter of hope. A chapter where God names people that he loves and cares for, that he's interested in, that he's offering Christ to. And therefore it's a chapter for us. Who am I? Who is my family? Am I just a little kind of cog in a big machine? This writer is saying, God is interested in you and you can belong to his family. Come in and join him in this family.